the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hello, how are you all doing? Welcome to the second episode of the What Bitcoin Did podcast. I am your host, Peter McCormack, and I am a full-time Bitcoin and crypto trader, and I operate the website whatbitcoindid.com. I have no idea where Bitcoin will be by the time this episode is out, but for me, it has just smashed through $10,000, which I think we can all agree is amazing. I don't have any predictions, I have no idea what's going to happen, but I do recommend you all take time to listen to Laura Shin's latest Unchained podcast with Naval Ravikant from AngelList, which I do hope I've pronounced correctly. It is probably the most intelligent and realistic approach to Bitcoin and crypto I have heard. I am bullish and I am holding. Listen, before I talk about this week's guest, I just want to thank you all so much for your support and feedback following the first episode. I am grateful for all the messages I've received on Twitter, on Facebook, and by email, and to anyone who took the time to go to iTunes and leave a 5-star review. It really does help. My initial intention was to produce a podcast every 2 weeks, but following the first interview, this week I had a chance to sit down with another crypto trader who has built a significant following, a chap who runs by the Twitter handle of @daytradernick. I'm not intending that every interview is going to be with a trader. Next week, I have a podcast lined up with a crypto techie, as I feel that as important as traders, we understand about what we're invested in. But with Nick, I feel he has a story that needs telling. I first became aware of him with a post he put out on Medium explaining how you invest in microcap coins, but it was back in October when he came fully on my radar and on the radar of a whole bunch of other crypto traders, as sadly Nick was hacked and he lost 2/3 of his trading portfolio. I remember reading his tweets and honestly, I was completely heartbroken for the guy and I question how I would have dealt with it. Nick's story needs telling. New investors are coming into the market and it is really important that you take security seriously. And I mean really seriously, because look, if it can happen to Nick, a seasoned veteran crypto trader, it can happen to anyone. It was a really great chat. We probably could have gone on for another hour or two. And when we grabbed lunch afterwards, there was a whole bunch of other topics we discussed. So I will probably have Nick back on the show in the future because he has so much good advice to share. And also, I didn't realize before I met him, he's only 22. So he's actually a year younger than Luke, who I met last week. And these guys are making me feel really old. Nick is a really great guy. And the composed manner in which he handled the hack and his outlook on this, life and money in general, was just a pleasure to hear. So I'd suggest, like last week, you listen closely, have a pen and paper handy, and take notes. I'm really, really grateful for Nick for giving me his time and candidly talking about what happened, which must have been a nightmare. I will add all his links in the show notes, including a link to his Patreon page, because he's using this to fund a book he is writing, which I know is just going to be gold dust. And as I mentioned last week, if you want to help the show, then there's a few things you can do. You can leave a review on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is @whatbitcoindid. You can go to the website, whatbitcoindid.com, and sign up for the newsletter. And if you enjoy the show, if you have any friends you think might like it, please do share it with them. I do have 3 more shows lined up, but if anyone in the space would like to appear on it, if you're a trader, a miner, investor, if you're a developer, or even if you're running some form of crypto asset, please get in touch. I want to have a broad spectrum of people on the podcast to help us all increase our knowledge. This week, I also want to give a shout out and thanks to my sound engineer, Jason Camiolo. He has been turning around the audio production on these podcasts super quick, as they are time sensitive in the market we trade in. I will add a link to his website in the show notes. If you have any audio engineering needs, then please do give him a shout. Also, finally, just a shout out and thanks to all the people within my Facebook group who've been helping me with admin and graphics. I do appreciate everything you guys have done. Okay. Here is the interview with Nick. As ever, I welcome any feedback, and I just hope you enjoy it. Hi, Nick. Thank you for having me here in Leicester to interview you for the second What Bitcoin Did podcast. I've asked you to turn your phone off, but there is a chance while we're doing this, we might have a 10K Bitcoin. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. Firstly, thank you for having me. I just want to say the podcast with Luke was fantastic. We need more of that in the space. To be honest, I'm like conflicted in my emotions because I'm excited about being here, but I'm also very disappointed I'm going to miss 10K.
I don't know if it's going to happen. I think as soon as we're done, we're going to be both switching on our phones and checking Blockfolio to see what's happened.
And it's gone down to 7K.
Yeah.
So, damn it. Crap. So close.
So listen, I first became aware of you back when I was trading earlier in the year. I did what most people do, trying to find more information out, more tips and learn more, and following a bunch of people on Twitter and then following who they follow. But with you, I became aware of you through a Medium post where you talked about strategy for trading microcaps. And that seemed to be an article that kind of catapulted you forward. Can you give me a bit of a background to how you got in this space, how you discovered Bitcoin, and how you came about doing that article?
Yeah, sure. So I, unlike, you know, probably the vast majority of people, I began with Dogecoin, not Bitcoin. I didn't even know what cryptocurrencies were. I was on Reddit. And I stumbled upon the Dogecoin Reddit, got some, you know, actual tips, some, you know, 10 Doge here, 15 Doge there, downloaded the wallet. I was like, this is cool. And then from then on, my next coin was Vertcoin, just from bouncing around on Reddit. And then I found Bitcoin after that. So that was a kind of weird way to get into it. But yeah, I think a lot of us wouldn't be here without Doge.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that. I was listening to the Crypto Street podcast on the way here with...
Not so fast.
Yeah, and he was saying
so
the same.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, it wasn't that. So what was your background before this, though? Because you've mentioned to me you also have done some Forex trading. You know, do you have some trained background in the trading?
Yeah, so I have no... Everything is self-taught with me. But essentially what happened is in 2013, December, that's when I first came across Dogecoin. I then traded in cryptocurrency for probably a year and a half. It was around early 2015, that I then decided, just before the bear market came in, this was perfectly timed, I decided to take a hiatus and learn much more in depth about technical analysis, and went into Forex and tried my hand at that. I came across a... trader called the Inner Circle Trader, ICT, and he essentially was putting out videos that were absolute gold, and I just focused on that for maybe a year and a half, and then it wasn't till January 2017, this year, that I returned to crypto.
And how similar was Forex to crypto? How did those lessons help you with it?
TA wise, a lot is very similar. Price is price. So price action trading is the same across most, if not all markets. The only difference is obviously when you have lower volumes and lower market caps, etc., manipulation is much more frequent and overt. And yeah, so let's take USD CAD, for example. That thing runs, it's called Loony for a reason. That thing runs like crazy. But when you compare that to a alt that's, you know, a 200K market cap that goes 5, 10 times in a week, it's very different. So,
okay. So I also became aware of you in another way earlier this year. And I want to focus on this first before we go into things like trading strategy, because at the time, actually, it totally broke my heart. I mean, you won't know. I was probably one of the people who messaged you on the day. Was it like October?
It was October 10th.
October the 10th. So October 10th, I saw a tweet from you where you talked about being hacked. And when I get approached, like probably you and anyone in the crypto space, people ask me when they want to get involved, the first thing I tell them to do is go and buy two Nano S's or go and buy a Trezor and understand security first. And you having a lot of experience in the space, you obviously took security seriously, but you suffered quite a significant hack. So let's go back to that day. Can you tell me when you first realized something was up?
Yeah, so what happened was on the evening of the 9th, I went to bed, I left my laptop on, I was staking 5 or 6 coins, and I woke up the next morning and I opened my, it was CoinNX, I opened that wallet and I was like, why has 75,000 XCXT left my wallet? I didn't send it. So I was like, okay, that must just be a glitch or something. I opened up my Equitrader wallet, all gone. It's like, okay, this is strange. opened up the rest of the wallet, everything was gone. And I was like, that's when I knew. I was like, something's happened somewhere. And I don't know how, but someone had managed to get on and steal my local wallet. So it wasn't until later that I then realized that Bittrex had also been cleared out. And it wasn't until, you know, I'd actually calmed down and got some clarity that I realized why this had all happened.
So calm down. So what happened? What did you do?
Nothing. Obviously, it wasn't calm. You know, I was calm in the sense that at first, when you find out, you're very shaken and you feel a little bit violated because you feel unsafe and like you could be being watched, that sort of thing. It's a very paranoid feeling. And it wasn't until maybe 6 to 8 hours later that I then sort of got to just sit down, you know, by myself and just think, you know, this is how this has happened. This is how I move on from it. So,
and how did it happen? Right, how did you get to the root of the problem?
So I was downloading brand new coins wallets to speculatively mine. So I was mining launches of coins that I think would, you know, go 10, 15x within a week from just having such a low mining average. One of these coins had a remote access Trojan, which bypassed my computer security. And I have no idea how this happened because my security catches everything usually. So that installed TeamViewer onto my PC. I didn't even know what TeamViewer was. It essentially allows for remote access to your computer from anywhere. And then once that had happened and whoever the hacker was had gained access to my computer remotely, he could then get rid of, you know, he got rid of everything in my local wallet because I had them unlocked for staking. And after that, I made this stupid mistake. I never do this. I left my backup code for my Bittrex 2FA on my PC, and it made a bad situation go to worse. I never do this. I think what must have happened is I'd have copied it down on the computer, thinking to copy it down in my notepad, and then just never done that step and never removed it from the PC. So that obviously made a bad situation worse.
So what then? What did you do after that? Once you realised everything had happened,
I rage tweeted.
Well, you did, but do you know what? Everyone rallied behind you, right?
Yeah, it was overwhelming. Honestly, the experience itself was devastating, but the response and the reaction from the community was even more overwhelming. I had like 1,000 messages in 24 hours. I couldn't even respond to everyone.
Apart from that one wanker who started trolling you.
Apart from that guy, yeah. Yeah, he was... It's fine, you know, each to their own.
Yeah. So, in terms of the coin... You say a coin had installed a Trojan on you.
Yeah.
So, who were they? What was that all about? Was that just a scam coin?
I'm pretty certain it was Phantom X, because then some people on Twitter, some security experts, were running the file through and finding a lot of stuff that isn't usually in a wallet. Like, there's always... Not always, but there is usually a malware detection on wallets because it picks up, I don't know, I'm a technical Neanderthal, but they pick up a certain file that was in the original Bitcoin wallet and all the clones from then on get picked up by certain malware detectors. But this specific file had bypassed that, and it wasn't until people did a sort of reverse engineering that they figured out.
And are they still going? Have you spoken to Phantom X? What's the deal?
I didn't speak to Phantom X, but they are still going. They're on MN rank, so.
Wow. Okay.
So maybe they cleared it up or got new devs. I don't know.
Okay. So you've got through that day.
Yep.
Did you get to sleep okay?
Yeah, it was fine. Honestly, it was. I'm only 22. It's not a big deal, really. Like it was 65% of my trading portfolio, but. My trading portfolio isn't my entire worth either. I was wise enough to diversify. And so, you know, whatever I lost, it was, you know, it's a significant amount. But I knew if I can do what I've done from 18 to 22, from 22 to 26, I'm still young. You know, when I'm 26, it's going to be a blip. So it's fine.
When did you start trading again?
It was probably 2 weeks after, because I'm writing my book. So I was like, and writing's my favorite thing. So I was like, that's going to take my mind off it. And I don't want to revenge trade to try and get things back, because a lot of people will do that. They'll have a big loss or a hack or something, and they'll be like, right, how do I get this back straight away? Make stupid decisions. So I was like, I'm just going to relax, take 2 weeks off, talk to some friends, talk to my family, and then just write my book. So that's all I was doing for 2 weeks.
And you obviously then had a new chapter to write that you probably hadn't prepared for.
Yeah, the silver lining is that there will be a hilarious new chapter in that book for many to read and learn from.
And have you written that bit yet?
No, not yet. I'm still writing. There's the memoir section of the book and the manual section of the book. And I'm doing the memoir section first because it's an utter nightmare. It's a mess because everything that happened when I was 18 is a blur. So trying to go back and recall how I got into the space and all the highs and lows is very difficult but interesting. So I'm writing that half of the book first.
And you're using Patreon to fund it, right?
Yeah, so the reason I was doing that, I was like, I'm going to write the book anyway. It doesn't really make a difference if people pledge or not, but it's a way for people who are very interested to have a say. It's a way for them to get extra material that I'm not going to include in the book, like that last chapter that I just published on advanced audiobook reading. And also, you know, I wasn't expecting anything like the donations that I got or I'm still receiving. So it's been wonderful, really.
Well, I'll put the link to the Patreon into the show notes. But you also had a lot of support from the community in terms of donations, right, to help recover some of your losses, which is one amazing thing about the crypto community.
Yeah, it reminded me of crypto in 2013-14, because what we had back then was a massive tipping phenomenon. Everyone would tip each other all the time. You know, every day people would be getting tips and giving tips. So that, you know, after and when a tragedy occurred or even something in real life occurred, people in the crypto community would sort of pull together and help out. And it was just it was very reminiscent of that time to have all that support, not just financial support, but like everyone messaging me, and it was amazing.
Did you think of quitting at all?
No, not once. I was very proud of myself, actually, because it was very shaking, and sort of I was sat there on my bed like, this is an absolute nightmare. What am I going to do? But I never once thought, I'm not going to do this again. You know, I'm not going to keep trading. I'm not going to stay in this space. This is me done. I wasn't thinking any of that. So,
well, that's cool. And has there only been any kind of a lingering, you know, emotional or psychological effects in terms of how you trade or how you approach your day or security? Has it changed anything?
There's certainly lingering effects security wise. I mean, I scan both PCs every day. I make sure all of my security is as it should be every single evening before I go to bed. In terms of emotional or psychological effects, I would say not. There's nothing really, my trading hasn't changed whatsoever. I'm pretty strong-minded as well. So for me, it was more what I could learn from it. And it's definitely made me a better trader and just a better person in the space. I know much more about security than I did before. And it was, you know, my mom said, what if this had happened 5 years down the line and for, you know, absolutely ridiculous amounts more? What then? Then you can't recover from that. You know, significant amounts now is much more palatable than overly significant amounts in 5 years' time. So,
and how do you feel about the hacker who did this and hackers in general?
To be honest, I have a very weird philosophy about this. Just like, not to get too deep, but I basically believe that anyone could be anyone else, and it's a complete, you know, it's just good fortune that I am who I am and I'm not the hacker or someone else. Maybe they needed to do it.
Okay, interesting.
And I could have been the hacker had I been a different sperm cell. So
a number of people who listen to this will be new to the space.
Yeah.
Like I said to you before, I first thing I tell people to do is think about security, think about passwords, and not like they've done before. you know, it's not a case of just having a new password, which is the daughter's name or something.
Yeah, definitely don't have, you know, your dog's name 1, your dog's name 2, your dog's name 3.
Yeah. What are the key things with regards to security you would be advising someone new coming into the space?
Okay, so...
Because you're, like, you're a seasoned veteran and you've been hacked.
Yeah, so I would say, right, so Loomdart introduced me to U2F keys. He got me to get one about 6 months ago. I would say that should be the first step in security for everyone. So
what's a U2F key?
It's just a physical key that provides a second layer of authentication for Gmail accounts in particular. And you can't log into that Gmail account without having this physical key plugged into your computer. So what I would say is a different Gmail account for every exchange and a U2F key to secure those Gmail accounts.
Okay, interesting. I've been using a secure email. I won't say which one, so people to target. But I do have old Gmail accounts as well, which I actually took my phone numbers off as I got advised.
Yes, that's another thing. Don't keep your phone number attached to anything to do with security. That should just be for texting your mum when you need a pint of milk. That's it. Nothing else.
Sad thing is, though, is, you know, all of us in the space love crypto. We love what it presents, the opportunities, both financially but also technology. But the security side of things is possibly the biggest negative to it.
It's a barrier to entry for anyone who isn't technologically minded. I mean, like I said to you, you know, off air, I'm a technological Neanderthal. I really am. It takes a lot of hard work for me to actually understand and comprehend things to do with security and just the tech behind cryptocurrencies. I'm much more, you know, pure trader. But it's work that has to be done. You have to take an active interest in securing your funds and understanding how that security works itself, because it is a liability if you're not.
And it's not just security around trading, but actually a big lesson is I had last week was security around researching what you invest in. I got busted in the Confido scam, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, the ICO thing.
Yeah, well, I didn't invest in the ICO. I invested post-ICO, and I can't remember the article, but there was an article that said 3 alternative coins to invest in from Bitcoin, and it was a major publication, and it was something like Dash, Ethereum, and Confido, and they put Confido in there as their kind of outsider bet. Mm-hmm. So I became aware of it. I did some limited research. I obviously didn't go on 4chan, and I'm happy to share the numbers because I shared this publicly, but I put £25,000 into this because it seemed like with the low market, with the low raise, a big opportunity. And obviously now, whether it's an exit scam or a legal issue, the money's gone. So people also need to be aware of scams out there.
Yep. Scams are a big thing in cryptocurrency still. They were even more so back in 2013-14. You know, devs would run off with pre-mines straight away. No one would even, if you had a pre-mine in 2014, you better justify that 1%. Now, 10%, it's fine. It's dev funds. It's okay. But back then, it was like 1%, and you have to come up with a solid philosophy for why you need this money. But yeah, so scams are definitely a thing to be wary of.
I think I saw you tweet something, or maybe retweet, where on CoinMarketCap there were adverts for 3 essentially Ponzi's at the same time.
Yeah, it's funny. CoinMarketCap, probably the most visited site in cryptocurrency daily, except maybe Coinbase and CoinDesk. So yeah, that's probably the third biggest. And they have literal Ponzi schemes all over the place. And for newbies, you know, why wouldn't you want 10% return on your investment in a day or whatever, guaranteed? It's just stupid.
I think BitConnect certainly needs delisting.
Yes.
There is a bunch of people behind that talking about it as well. I mentioned to you the other day when we were talking about Tether. So interestingly, I had a Skype call with Twitter user BitFinext, who has been campaigning for this, and I'm staying neutral right now. I see the argument for it being an issue, with potentially being similar to Liberty Reserve, I think it is, which means the US government won't like it. And I see the other side where people are saying it's fine, it's used for institutional money to buy up large stakes within Bitcoin. But he certainly raised it to the point where I think the New York Times or Wall Street Journal have brought it up and other people have taken a look. Do you have any view on Tether?
To be honest, I don't think I have a very valuable view on it. I don't really keep up to date with what's going on with Tether. I am aware of Bitfinex reservations, but also it does have its advantages. You know, it's great not having to cash out into USD. I've never actually used Tether, so I'm going to put that out there. I've never actually used it, so I can't firsthand say what the benefits are, but I know people who rely on it. They margin trade a lot more. It's so, you know, it swings and roundabouts.
I think one of the fears is not so much whether it's a scam, but more that it might get shut down by the US government, in that it is a tool potentially for money laundering. You could buy Tether on one exchange in one country, transfer the Tether to another exchange, and then liquidate your position.
Very true.
And I think that's the potential risk, but, you know, we'll see. Yeah. Okay, look, I want to talk a bit about strategy. You know, it's like anybody listen to this, like anybody who follows you on Twitter, in the end, most people want to know what trades you're going to make. But you know as well as I do, it's better that people learn strategy and learn their own way of trading. So could you talk to me about what your broad trading strategy is?
What I would say my trading strategy is, well, firstly, I'd like to start a bit macro. Make sure you are diversifying your portfolio. That is right. So if I had to go for three of the main things newbies should be looking at, it's risk and portfolio management, security, and patience. You can't teach patience, but you can definitely learn the other two. So we've gone over security with risk and portfolio management. Make sure you're putting 10% of your profits from a trade, 15% of your profits from a trade into cold reserve BTC that you're not gonna touch. Just put it on your hardware wallet, put it in a paper wallet, and stick it in a safe. Something like that. Just do that. Also, look at other assets that are not directly correlated to cryptocurrencies. Like, I have been buying 100 ounces, you know, 50 ounces at a time of silver periodically as Bitcoin has been rising from about 5.5K.
Okay, this is really interesting. Because you mentioned that the other day. I've not actually heard somebody else do this. There's another trader, Nick Trades, Nicola Duke.
No, I don't follow her.
She's great. And she trades Forex, crypto, commodities, stock. So she trades across everything, but she does a lot in crypto. And I've seen is those people have exposure to non-crypto trading seem to be more experienced in trading. They talk a better game. So can you talk about why silver? And
So I mean, the reason why silver is the same reason why anything for me in trading, because I go chart first, and then after that I will look into the fundamentals and everything else. So for me, the silver chart historically just looks beautiful. Like, on the monthly, I showed you the chart on Twitter, and I'll put one up later so people can, you know, go back after this conversation and see what I'm talking about. But the silver chart, the monthly silver chart, just looks like we are on the precipice of the next bull cycle for it. And considering we are now, what, 10 years without a recession, when the next financial crisis happens, I think we go commodities and cryptocurrency, nothing else.
What does a bull run in silver look like? Because a bull run in crypto is 10x, 20x, ridiculous. What's a bull run in silver?
The thing is, I've only started buying now that it's hit, you know, below $19 is when I started buying. So for me, I've not experienced a silver bull run before. But going off the chart, the all-time high on the monthly chart seems to be like 48.50 or something. So it's only like a 4x from here. But when you consider that it's physical silver that you can keep, that you have full control of, just like a private key for Bitcoin, I think, you know, a 4x is a 4x. And if it happens in 10 years' time and you're thinking that far ahead, you can put in, you know, 10% or 15%, like the same thing with cold wallet BTC, into anything that you think as an asset has potential to increase over the next decade or so. And just do that and make sure you keep at it and don't get complacent.
Where do you buy the silver from?
Right, so I use two websites that allow you to directly buy using BTC. BitGild, BITGILD.com. I've used them 4 times now, and they've delivered from, I think they're in Netherlands. and they've delivered within 4 to 5 days to the UK. And they do VAT-free silver because I don't know the technicals, but there is a specific, I don't know what the word is, but within EU law, you're allowed to sell silver coins without charging VAT. So yeah, that's definitely a advantage over buying gold or buying silver bars. Go for coins. The other website, I'm not even going to try and spell.
I'll put it in the show notes.
It's Dutch. It's like zilvergoodwinkel.nl.
Brilliant.
I'm not going to try and spell that.
Brilliant name. Have you actually sold silver back at all?
No, not yet.
How would you do that?
Well, lots of places accept it. You know, there's British companies that are solely focused on bullion, so bullion by post. Places like that, they'll buy back your silver. Obviously, they charge an undercut of, or they take an undercut of the spot price. So you might get right now, silver is £12, you know, 60, £12, 70 an ounce, something like that. They might give you 12 quid.
Okay.
But for me, it's not actually, the reason I'm buying physical silver is not just for potential gains, but to diversify my portfolio so my risk is spread across the board. And also because it's something that even if it doesn't go four times in a decade, even if it just stays where it is, my money has not moved. You know, it's a constant and consistent asset to rely on and depend on to keep your money in.
So it's essentially de-risking, where others hedge with Bitcoin, but if you hedge with Bitcoin, and Bitcoin itself can crash.
I've seen an alt and BTC bear market, and it is ugly.
Yeah, what, post Mt. Gox?
Yeah, just and also 2015 early when I left, and this was like, I don't know if it was a coincidence or I'm the messiah, but I left in early 2015 as BTC and alt both just capitulated for a year and a half, and then returned in January when we had this bull run again.
Yeah.
It was great.
That's just when I entered as well. Okay, so do you trade anything else outside of crypto and silver?
No, I've actually stopped trading Forex. It's just not as interesting. Trading for me isn't what I love. It's not what I enjoy doing. It's a means to an end, and it allows me to pursue what I love and what I'm passionate about on a day-to-day basis without worrying about financials. So for me, trading as little as possible and only in the things that really interest me is much more what I want to do than, you know, just trading everything because for the sake of trading. So I stopped doing Forex when I came back to cryptocurrencies in January, and I don't have any intention of rejoining that. And, you know, unless we get a BTC and alt bear market, and you just go back and make some more money there.
And like Not So Fast was saying on the Crypto Street podcast, there's just always an interesting conversation to be had. Like,
yeah.
I met Luke, I'm meeting you now. You could be on Twitter.
Yeah.
There's always some drama, some conversation going
on. Yeah, it's a dynamic environment. And compared to Forex, which is dull beyond measure, I would say, you know, just stick to crypto. It's just so much more interesting. The space is in its infancy, even though we're at 10K Bitcoin. Really, is it actually that great in terms of size? Not particularly. We're still an infant industry and an infant tech.
I think it seems big in size because of the price, but I was thinking on the way
over, where we've come from.
Yeah, of course. But I was thinking on the way over, like if Satoshi Nakamoto had decided that it was going to be, I don't know, 210 million Bitcoins, you know, would we be £1,000 now? And wouldn't seem so big. It's all relative,
yeah,
you know, to where the decimal point is.
So. Well, yeah, Jeff Bezos' net worth is like 100 billion. So to think that, oh, you know, 200 billion or whatever we're at with Bitcoin now, it's minute.
We want Jeff Bezos to take crypto on Amazon.
That would be fantastic. Please do, because I use Amazon so much.
Okay, so look, in terms of portfolio management, where do you sit between trading Bitcoin v trading other leading crypto, Litecoin, Ethereum, Dash v midcoins v microcaps?
So
across the
percentages,
board. Yeah, right. Well, percentages, portfolio management, or where are you most interested in trading?
I'm sure most people are aware. I would say what my forte is probably microcaps and low caps. I tend to have a very different risk perception to a lot of people. I actually find that trading low caps, because I know them so well, is much better for my mindset and my peace of mind than trading high caps and mid caps, because I'm less effective at those. So I tend to keep, you know, the 15% that I do in cold wallet BTC, not traded, nothing. Keep maybe 5% in BTC for random crashes and low bids. I keep nothing really in high caps unless something really takes my fancy. Maybe 10% in mid caps, and the rest I just play degenerate.
Right, so you're like a hardcore aggressive micro cap.
Yeah, but the thing is, the wonderful thing about fixed percent risk is I can put 3% of my portfolio into a absolute shitcoin, and it is only ever going to lose me 3%. So for me, I'm much better at having 30 altcoins that are all under $5 million market caps, and playing those, than I am at having, you know, maybe 10%, 15% of my portfolio in one mid cap or high cap.
So really, you're a trader. You're looking for growth and scalping in and out.
To a degree, I stopped day trading, even though, you know, contrary to my Twitter name, which I should probably change. But I stopped day trading in about March, when we began this bull run. Really, I was like, day trading is just too much stress, and it's not really that enjoyable. But it does give good returns if you know how to do it. So I was like, I'm just going to focus on intra-week, intra-month, and a few long-term plays.
So to new traders, what, explain intra-week and intra-month, because so, this comes up even intraday. And what
does
it mean
so
to people?
Intraday is day trading. You're trading, so you might enter London Open in the morning, 8 a.m. GMT, and probably exit London Close 4 p.m., and you might be looking for, you know, 1 or 2% moves in Bitcoin, so margin trading that on 10x or something like that. You might be looking at high caps that have the highest volume of the day on Bittrex, which might move 10%, 5%. So you're trying to get those scalps within a day. But it is stressful, and I would not advise it. If you want to day trade Forex. Cryptos and day trading are a very difficult thing to master, and I haven't mastered it for sure. I found my most effective way of trading is to go for intra-week and intra-month. And what I mean by that is looking for plays that you think are going to grow within the week or the month. So you might buy the 1st of November and be looking to sell the 20th or the 25th of November. So you're in it for 3 weeks. But in crypto, that's like a lifetime. A coin can go 15x in 3 weeks.
Okay, so you talk a lot about technical skills and technical analysis. Yeah. You put out technical analysis, you put out charts. A lot of people coming into crypto can't do this full time. They have jobs, they have families, they want to. Realistically, like Luke said last week, most shouldn't be trading. They should be just been buying and holding something, but you can't stop people trading.
No.
So there's a lot to learn with technical analysis. I've been in for this a year, and I'm still at my absolute basics. If a new trader was coming to you and they're saying, look, I want to start trading, what are the key things around technical analysis that they could learn quickly and easily that will improve their trading?
Okay, so what I would say about that is I don't think there is a quick and easy.
Okay.
But that is definitely not a reason not to get involved with technical analysis, because it is magic when you get it right. I, like I said before, learned most of what I know through Inner Circle Trader tutorials, which is price action. So you're not doing patterns, nothing, no head and shoulders, no triangles, nothing like that. It's all based on where price is and where price is reaching for, stop losses, etc. So, you know, where the liquidity is and where price is looking to move. So as a new trader, I would say look up whatever you can by him. It's all free.
So we can put that in the show notes. Okay.
Yeah. So look up whatever you can by him. You will have to invest probably 80 hours of your time before you get anywhere near, anywhere near a level of competence with it. But it is, the material is gold. Other than that, obviously there is the traditional means of technical analysis, just looking at you know, learning your patterns, learning how to spot them without actually having to draw them on a chart. That is, you know, now the reason I put things on charts now is mainly to, one, to put them in my Telegram thing so other people can learn from it.
Is that a free group?
Yeah, it's free. Yeah. The only reason I created it is so I would have a running list of my thoughts, and I could go back at any time and compare charts from different days, and I wouldn't have to sift through Twitter or something like that. So it's just great to have a channel. No one else can talk in it. And then I was like, anyone else wants to have a look at where my thoughts are on any coin on any given day?
Can anyone? So anyone can follow that?
I
can.
Yeah,
share
yeah.
That.
There's the link. Links in my bio. Just okay. You can just go have a look at that. And I try to put as much detail in so people who don't know what I'm talking about have some sort of idea.
How many people are in the group?
Like 2,900 or something.
Any reason you've not considered a paid group?
I don't need to make money off people. It's fine.
Do you have a view on that?
No, I'm absolutely fine with paid groups as long as you're offering something that's worth what you're charging. No worries whatsoever. Signals, piss off. Everything else, if you're actually teaching people, you should be able to charge.
So again, explain signals, because I know of a couple of key people who charge. I won't pull out their name, but they charge based on signals. And why is that bad?
Because you're not teaching anybody anything. You're and it's fine, you know, each to their own. I don't actually have a, you know, I say piss off, it's funny, but it's, you know, I'm not really meaning it seriously. The reason I don't like paid signals is just because you could do so much more, and you know you could do so much more to help that person for what you are charging them, but you're lazy.
It's kind of why I liked, I think a lot of my opinion on groups changed after meeting Luke when he explained his to me, in that he actively teaches people to trade.
Yeah, and that's what you should do.
Yeah, they don't need to be there for full-time. They can join for a month and then hopefully leave being able to learn how to trade.
The aim of it, and this is where paid groups can be great. The aim of it should be, I don't want you to stay in my paid group. The reason I'm charging is because you can, you know, I only have limited resources and limited time. So people who are charging and actually teaching, that's great, because you are, those people then don't need to pay for anything 3 months down the line when they've mastered what you're teaching.
Rather than copy trading, but with your own emotions rather than trader's emotions.
Or just paying for signals for 3 years because you don't know how to trade for yourself. And all that money that you've spent, you could have 10x'd in one coin that you've learned how to trade through, you know, Luke's group or something like that.
Do you margin trade at all? And do you have an opinion on that?
I used to margin trade. I don't really anymore. I do sometimes. I have a BitMEX account. You know, it's not really something I do very often. If I'm anticipating big moves, then yeah, I'll throw on a long for fun, never a short. But I don't, yeah, there's no, the opinion I have of margin trading is that it's very similar to Forex, because, you know, you're leveraging when you're doing Forex. You're definitely not buying, you know, £1 sterling and selling it for $1.50 or whatever. So it's the same sort of thing, and you just use the same techniques that you learn in price action trading to get in and out.
I think it's a great tool for a very experienced trader who can afford to take risks when they know the market's going to move.
Yeah.
But the companies offering margin trading do it because they make a profit from it. And I think the majority of the time they're making a profit from people who don't know what they're doing.
Who don't have a clue.
Which is why I tell people not to do it.
Yeah. But at the same time, that is what, this is a zero-sum game, and that is what we are involved in. You can't, 100% of people can't win.
True.
And I'm very glad of that. Otherwise, no one would win.
Well, actually, there are arguments against it being a zero-sum game.
Yeah, no, there are. There
in
are.
That it only becomes a zero-sum game when the market goes to zero. But I know what you mean.
Everyone,
there are winners,
you know,
and losers.
Someone has to buy the top.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so someone's going to buy the $100,000 Bitcoin.
And not just that. Someone's going to buy, you know, there was a coin back in like 2013-14 called Kitty Coin. You know, someone's going to buy the top and it's never going back there.
Well, you know what? There was a time when people were saying there was someone who bought a $50 Litecoin.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, that's different. This is, Litecoin's a legit coin. This is a...
Do you know what? I remember seeing there was a guy on Reddit and he'd held Litecoin since it was about $50 back in 2013, and it was around $3 or $4. And he was like, look, I've had enough. I've held onto this for years. I'm done. It keeps going down. And he sold it. And then they announced Segwit, Coinbase. And I just felt so sorry for him.
Yeah, no, that's devastating.
I mean, you sort of talked about patience, but...
I mean, I had the same thing when I started, because the first coin I put my own money into was Vertcoin. And this was when it first got released. I was like, reading the Reddit channels and posts, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I could, you know, my 150 quid could become one and a half grand. And I was an 18-year-old. I'm like, this is wonderful. I bought Vertcoin at the top and sold it. You know, it'd gone down maybe 30%, sold it. Then I bought Mazacoin at the top. Then I lost 80% of that. Then I bought Spaincoin at the top, and I lost that. I was 90% down on my account within 4 days of having a Mintpal account.
But do you know what? I bought EOS about, I don't know, it was about 6 weeks ago. It was about 60 cents. Went down to about 50, got back up to about 70, and I was like, nah, I'm out. This ICO is going to go on for another year, and now I think it's about $3. Oh. My friend Tom, who I told to buy it, still in it, and I think it's his biggest thing at the moment. Okay, so look, in terms of trading, it's always good to have people to bounce ideas off.
Yeah.
Is there anyone in the space? I asked Luke this, and I think it's a fair question. Are there any kind of people that you bounce ideas off, or other people you say, look, follow these guys on Twitter? They know what they're talking about.
Yeah, so the three people, if I had to pick three, I would say, okay, I'm gonna pick four. I would say Noose and Bitcoin Dad. So Ant is his name, and Bitcoin Dad. Follow those two, because, you know, Noose especially will teach you to swallow your ego, and that is very important. You should trade like a robot. There should be no highs when you make a 10x. You know, it should be very contained, and he will teach you that, and also when to cut your losses. Unless you're like me or need a coin and you'll hold for like six months, that's fine. It depends on your strategy, of course. The other two people I would say is Not So Fast, Just a Genius, and Secrets of Crypto.
Okay, I mean, I'll share those all in the show notes. The guy I've been following recently I quite like is Wilson Trudler.
I think I had a conversation with him a couple of days ago, you know, in tweets, but I don't think I follow him.
He's quite interesting. So, okay, any big mistakes you've made outside of, obviously, we talked about security, but anything, big mistakes you've made that you see other people making that you would say, look, avoid this?
I talk about it in my, okay, so this is like a very niche mistake, a very specific mistake, and I talk about it in my chapter on order book reading. People don't know how to react to sell walls and buy walls. And I understand it, because I remember when I started and I saw a big buy wall, I was like, I have to get in. This is going to go up. And when I saw a big sell wall, I was like, damn, I need to sell because this is going to go down. Do the opposite.
So explain for new people what a sell and a buy wall is.
Yeah, so a buy wall is a large order that has been placed in the book to drive newbies and inexperienced traders into the market maker's sells. And a sell wall is the reverse of that. So they will put up a big sell order that is outsizes the rest of the order book. And that will drive prices down, because people will panic sell, thinking, oh, there's this big, huge sell. We're not going to get past it. We need to sell down. And that will go straight into the market maker's buy orders.
And in the exchange, how would they visually recognize that? This is where you see the chart, and below the chart you see the big green blocks.
Yes, so you have the order book, and in the you have an ask side and a bid side, so a sell and a buy. And usually a wall will be identifiable by the size in Bitcoin compared to the orders above and below it. So, for example, I run through an example with Ubic in my chapter, and I'm talking about how you might see, you know, in the order book, you might see one order of 100,000 UBIC in the buy. And, you know, I don't know how many BTC that is. It's a lot. And that likely could be a spoof order and a buy wall that is primarily there to drive inexperienced traders into the sells of the market makers. And then what they'll do is they'll put a sell wall up, and everything that you've just bought, they'll buy back cheaper.
This can't happen every time, though. So how are you recognizing, or are you just ignoring them?
What do you mean it can't happen every time? It can. It does.
So would you say every time it's happening, it is essentially a fake position to drive?
Most of the time. I mean, markets are manipulated. That's what they are. Yeah. Every single coin in the space that has any volume or any interest is manipulated. And the way to accumulate without raising price significantly is to use these walls to push price around within a very constricted area, a very constricted price area. So most of the time, if you see the reason you'll, the way you'll be able to tell whether a buy wall is actually a spoof order that is there to push you up and get you to buy a sell is because once someone starts dumping into it, they'll remove the order. So they don't want that much UBIC. They don't want that much mothership.
They just want to get the price down.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Interesting. So in terms of when you're trading, do you have any preference in terms of, do you use any fundamental analysis, and do you have any preference in terms of the type of projects or sectors or coins you go into, or do you not care?
Yeah. So my strategy on the micro level is to look at a coin's chart before I look at anything else. And once I've determined whether that chart looks appetizing, I will then look into the coin's fundamentals. So take, for example, Reynos right now, which is on Cryptopia. That chart, to me, is magnificent. Like, it's got perfectly defined cycles of 125, 128 days. I can't remember exactly. And is in a great accumulation zone right now. So if I didn't know what that coin was, I would look at that. I would chart it. I would draw up the chart and put whatever analysis I needed to on it. Once I'd then determined that this looks good for a buy, I would determine whether it is worth a buy. And I do that by then, you know, looking at the Bitcoin Talk thread. I go through this in the article that I wrote on Medium.
I'll share that Medium one.
Yeah. And I'll go through the fundamentals there. I'll look at the community, whether it's growing, how much development there is, what it's got lined up for the next 3 months, the next month, the next 6 months. I will look at the rich list, see whether the top wallets have been accumulating and have for how long.
That's a really interesting point. I've never heard somebody mention that before.
Yeah.
Can you explain that and how people would find that information out?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many golden nuggets in this space that we are afforded and given that we aren't given in any other financial market. The beauty of a block explorer with a rich list is all the wallets are visible to anyone. So you can find your coin that you're interested in, look at the block explorer, look at the top 100 addresses, and go through them, you know, monitor them once a week, screenshot them, see which of the addresses are selling, so coins are being removed, and which are accumulating. See what the changes are after a week, after a month, and whether those addresses have gotten bigger or smaller. That will tell you whether people are interested for the long term or whether they are getting rid of their coins.
Okay, that's really interesting. So I just want to talk a little bit about the markets now. Do you have any particular view on what's been going on with forks and ICOs? I'm kind of asking both together because to me, they're actually now starting to become very similar things.
Yeah, the same sort of thing.
Kind
of,
yeah.
Just stop, guys. Just stop. That's all I'm going to say. You know, I don't get into ICOs very often. The only... there's only three that I've been involved in. The Mothership ICO, which I'm still bullish on, but you know,
the Estonian guys.
Yeah. And I think that's a good play for 2018. Covesting, which I got into very recently, I got in the pre-ICO, and that's a copy trader platform. And the other copy trader platform, which is EQT, which I obviously lost in the hack and is now doing terribly. So I'm glad I didn't get back in.
Okay.
But I bought that at the ICO of 5K sats. It went up to 30K sats and then is now down at 2.5K or something like that. But those are the only three ICOs I've ever been interested in. Everything else, I'm very, very picky with stuff like that. And I just don't think, unless you have a working product, like that's what I love about Covesting, is that they have this working platform. Their estimations and what they are expecting and what they want is, you know, reasonable. Compared to the ICOs we've seen, which want 60 million off the bat for an idea.
Well, you'll struggle to raise a million from VC at the moment without a working product.
Yeah, exactly. The reason is because it's FOMO. People have fear of missing out, and newbies think this is the way to easy money, to quick money. So I'm going to put, you know, if I'm going to put half of what I have into ICOs, and most of them fail.
When you're looking at a microcap project, maybe something that's just come out of ICO, are you waiting at all to see if it dumps first? Is that something that's relevant to you?
Well, I don't buy ICOs after they come onto the exchange either.
How long do you leave them for?
No, just in general. Like, I haven't actually picked up an ICO project outside of ICO. Like I said, I got in the three ICOs that I mentioned, and other than that, I haven't actually bought an ICO coin that's got onto an exchange ever. It's just not my sort of thing, really. It doesn't interest me. And I think there are much better opportunities elsewhere. I love, you know, old school coins, proof of work coins, proof of stake coins, stuff like that, which is, you know, you can find a coin with a 30 BTC market cap. You know, it's only, what, $300,000. And that can go 20x within 3 months. That's much more interesting to me than an ICO.
Okay, man, look, this is all really, really cool stuff. So, listen, crypto can take over our life. It's 24/7 market. We can all wake up in the middle of the night and check our portfolio. But what do you do outside of crypto? Kind of, what's your interest? What ticks your boxes?
It's cool that you said it's 24/7, because for me, it's completely not. It's I spend maybe, people are always like shocked at this, but I spend like 10 hours a week on crypto, maybe 15 in between the week.
You're a freak in crypto.
So obviously I'll like shitpost on Twitter, but other than that, I'm not doing much actively in the space within the week, except on my research week. So every month I'll have 1 week where I'll do like 40 hours of research into new coins, into current coins, see where I'm at. That just gives me my feeling for the market. Other than that, the other three weeks of the month, I spend probably 10 hours actually doing crypto-related things. I read a lot, I write a lot. That occupies most of my time.
So you crypto so you can write?
Yeah.
And outside of your book, what kind of things do you like to write?
Everything in reality. You know, I was doing fashion journalism before. I like to write, you know, anything, film reviews or fiction, you know, short stories, poetry, all sorts of things. I just love writing. It keeps my mind stimulated, and alongside reading, that's pretty much all I do.
And what's the dream, man? What's the future? What do you want to happen?
The dream, right? Yeah. So I'm pretty reserved in what I want. You know, people want Lambos. What I want is a self-built home, paid for completely up front. So, you know, debt is slavery. Don't get into debt. Don't take out loans for this shit. All I'd say is save up enough, buy a house with cash, and that's what I'll be doing hopefully next year, hopefully the year after, around then, before I'm 25. And
you're going to build it with your own hands?
No, I'm not going to build it with my own hands, unfortunately. I don't think I have the skill for that. But I will definitely be looking into self-builds, because they're so much cheaper than buying a pre-built house, and I have the patience and the time. So that is the dream for me, because once you have a house, you know most of your worries are set. You have a place to live forever.
You don't have children.
I don't.
You wait until you have children.
I don't think I want children.
And what about your family and friends? What do they make of what you do? Do they understand it?
Most people don't know what I do, to be honest. Okay. My family know, of course. My girlfriend knows. I tend to keep it on the down low. I just, you know, if I'm out with friends, you know, buy them a couple of drinks, and that's all they need to know.
Okay. Look, a couple of closing thoughts. This has been great, Nick. I do really appreciate your time. Any particular resources? You've talked about the YouTube videos, which I'll add into the show notes, but any other particular resources you would refer people to? Any books, films, reading material?
I'm gonna give a secondhand referral, because I haven't actually read it, but I've heard very good things from people I respect. Chris Berniski's book.
Luke brought it up as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't read it. I haven't got around to reading it, and my reading list is like 120 books right now, so probably won't get around to it anytime soon.
So I went on Amazon last night, and it sold out.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, so you probably can't read that unless you can borrow a copy from a friend.
I think it's restocked 2nd December or something.
Yeah, so there's that. There's also not-so-fast articles on Medium about security and stuff like that. And just keep up to date with the interesting veterans on Twitter. You know, there are a lot of newbies as well who are very good. So just make sure you have a diversified following list and just keep up to date with what they're into. There's a reason why they are where they are.
Have you seen the Banking on Bitcoin documentary?
Yeah, on Netflix.
Well, I saw it on the plane on the way up to America, and I think for the first time ever, I truly understood on a kind of, I don't know, on a fundamental level what this actually means to people.
I know.
And I finally got it.
So it's amazing. The fact, you know, because we don't think about remittance. For us, I'm not sending money to Ethiopia and getting 35% taken by Western Union. But it is a huge thing.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. And when people watch stuff like that, which is very accessible, I think it can only do good things for the space. So those sort of resources are vital.
Cool, man. Okay, I think we're about there. Any closing thoughts? Anything you want to say?
Not particularly. I think I've said everything I need to say. Just don't buy stupid ICOs, please.
Okay, appreciate this, man. That was really good.
No worries. Cheers.
Wow, how scary was that? Could you imagine waking up and finding 2/3 of your trading portfolio had gone because some hacker had accessed your computer? I would feel sick. I'm going to be reviewing my security procedures, which are already pretty tight, and I recommend you doing the same. And in the show notes, I'm going to share some stuff which Nick has sent me to help you with that. But listen, look, outside of that, he's positive about it. He's going to trade his way out of this. He's going to make more money because he is a solid trader. So also, look, follow him on Twitter. I will put his link in the show notes. And also check out his Telegram group where he explains his trades that he is doing and why, because you can actually learn from him too. Also, as before, please do support the show. If you can, give us a review on iTunes, share it with your friends, follow me on Twitter or Instagram, and access the website and sign up to the newsletter. Hopefully, I will have another great interview for you all next week. Until then, happy trading, have a great week, and I'm here if you have any questions. Okay, bye.